I was born again at 7 a.m. on September 15th in the year 2000. Maybe I should explain. Just the night before, Kim and I had returned to our home in California from our three-week trip to China, where we had been united with our new and not yet one-year-old daughter, Taylor Yangqing Tucker Gray. Then, the next morning, Kim, though reluctantly, said goodbye to our new daughter and her wife and headed off to work. So there I was, a brand new mother, and I do really mean brand new, going on 12 days of experience under my belt, with a baby girl who we had just brought home from halfway around the world. And just so that you can grasp the full intensity of the moment, I should also share that until that very moment, our new daughter, not once during the first 12 days of my motherhood, not once had allowed me to hold her without breaking into serious, no-holds-bar, like Leontina Price kind of screaming way. And here we were, all alone. I had no idea what to do. I had no idea how to be a mom. So, as it turns out, I did what moms have done for centuries in these moments of uncertainty. I sat on my daughter's bedroom floor, I looked at this beautiful little baby girl, and I started crying too. Mine were not tears of pain or sadness, but tears of overwhelming awe and wonder. And, as I look back, tears of deep joy. There was nothing else in the world, it seemed, that mattered in that moment. I remember feeling both a little, well, maybe a lot, helpless, and also completely present. And I knew from that moment going forward, everything in my life would be different because of this little baby girl. Now today, as only God could have planned with these readings, today we celebrate Taylor's 19th birthday. And I can see with hindsight that having that child literally placed in the center of my life that day reoriented everything I ever held of value. I knew I would be forever reminded that I was no longer, thank God, in the center of my world. In other words, that day I was born again. Children can do that, you know? Whether they are your own or not, children help us reprioritize and reframe and remember what is truly important and holy and sacred. Children, perhaps because they are often more truly present and capable of living in the moment, can jar us out of our illusions of control and autonomy. Children can speed us up or slow us down in a heartbeat. But either way, they draw us out of our own frenzy. They can help us reorient to true north. Jesus knew all about that, didn't he? And while first century and 21st century attitudes and beliefs about youth and childhood may be worlds apart, time and time again, children show up in Jesus' stories a lot, and they have a very special role. Jesus uses children not as role models or sentimental Hallmark card-like images, but as emphatic and iconic reminders that when we get too far out in front, when we become too focused on things of the empire, the powers and principalities that can govern and influence our lives and our choices, when we get seduced into thinking that might makes right, or the one who screams the loudest will win the argument, or that we are unworthy if we're not employed or insured or partnered or educated, when any of those things get us stuck, Jesus simply reaches down, picks up a child, The one who has no economic worth, no status, no power or influence, and gently puts her in the middle of the group and says something like this: "Quit your bitching. Stop arguing. Just stop it. Pay attention. Get out of the center of your own world and love her. Because to love her is to love me. And to love me is to love the one who sent me. Get out of your own way and show up for God." Sometimes we need to stop and remember the value of what it means to simply be fully present, to take time to remember the value of being silent, or really listening deeply to someone else, or remembering the simplicity of our own belovedness. Jesus holds a child up again and again as a reminder that our greatness is measured in direct proportion to our willingness to attend to what may never be valued by the world's standards. Greatness in kingdom terms is measured by what we do for others when no one else is looking. Each time Jesus reaches down to lift up and bless a child, nothing advances in his social position. And yet I believe those are the moments then and now when the kingdom, or to put it another way, the reign of love, moves closer and closer. This is the paradox of the gospel this morning. To be first, one must be last and servant of all. We are indeed a progressive, inclusive, creative downtown community of faith, visibly and palpably embracing this paradoxical nature of what it means to be great. Our greatness, our faithfulness, will be measured through our willingness to live on the margins of a culture that wants to seduce us into thinking it knows who and what is greatest. Our greatness, our faithfulness, will be seen and felt each time we make room for someone else at this table of love, or each time we find a way to be of service to someone else. Our greatness, our faithfulness, will be felt out in the greater Toledo area as we push ourselves to reach out and connect with those the world would rather we fear or reject. Embracing this paradox means claiming a posture of surrender and trusting that our strength is found not by might, but by through the unshakable certainty of love. I also want to point out that being last and a servant of all is not synonymous with being a doormat. We are not called to be spiritual wet noodles working for the kingdom. Oh no, not here, not us. Can I get an amen?
Amen?
In fact, it is possible to me that what we're actually talking about is the exact opposite. I believe the place of greatest strength, the posture of unparalleled potential Jesus points us to, is remembering that we are our best selves when we too can source all of who we are and what we do from a place of selfless love and wonder and awe. That is when we remember the symbol and the image of the child in our midst. It is strength and clarity that comes from our deepest selves, the core of who we were made to be in God's image. It is the strength of character that emerges when we are able to say to our very overly sometimes developed egos, "You can sit down now. You can move over. Maybe right now you're not in charge." It's the strength and clarity that comes from remembering so much of what we seem to forget as we grow up and move away from the children that we once were. So what do we do today in faithful response to this paradox in the Gospel of Mark? Maybe the best thing to do is simply to stop chasing, to stop worrying, to stop arguing, to stop striving and plotting and scheming towards success in the world's standards, and instead do something to simply remember our belovedness. Can you imagine that you might just be the child that Jesus lifts up today and places in the center of the disciples, recognizing and affirming your belovedness? Not in spite of your shortcomings or your weaknesses or your mistakes or your doubts and fears, but rather because at your core, who you are is none of those things. At your core, as a child, and yes, somewhere deep inside even today, you were and still are an expression of pure love. The very beauty of our souls outshines every mistake and doubt and fear we have ever entertained. Jesus knows that we are good, and we are kind, and we are full of love. May we gift ourselves this paradox today, learning to trust that we are great when we stop trying to be first and best. We are loved in the moments we feel most unlovable. We are worthy in the place wherever we stand, even if we are lost and frightened. May we lose ourselves in the moment from time to time so that we can be truly found. May we trust what is unseen so that we can grow deeper in faith. And may we die a little every day so that we too can be jarred out of our routines and ruts in order to be born again through the smallest and most beautiful reminders, like a child placed in our midst. Happy birthday, Taylor, and may it be so.